week. I want a straight time travel show next week. I haven't done that in a while, where I jump around from year to year. And you can call in and make requests at 855-915-WMFO. I'm going to leave you with this one, Heroes, Time Travel. Good night, everybody.
WMFO Medford, 91.5 FM. It is The Big Picture. Derek, Gary, and Shea Spillane with you until 9 o'clock tonight. 855-915-9636 is the telephone number. 855-915-WMFO. Write it down. Call us up. We love to hear from our listeners.
Do.
Coming up later tonight, The Fire and the Fury. I think with an emphasis on the fury or maybe the fire, we're going to emphasize one of them. But there's a lot of both coming out of Washington, D.C.
If ever
right
there
now.
Was time to burn a book, I mean.
Yeah. That book is just got everybody all kinds of keyed up.
Yes.
And we're going to have some fun with that. So stick around. We'll be talking about The Fire and the Fury. Our favorite things from the past week, the strangest things from the past week, and all the stories that caught our attention. Happy Get Rid of Your Tree Week, Shea Spillane.
Yes. Well, I felt a little left out. I won't lie to you. Because my, as our loyal listeners know, I'm staying with my mom right now. It's not terrible at all. I'm just kidding. Mom, you're the best. But I hate the suburbs. But we have like a tiny little nothing tree. It was really, I didn't have that satisfaction of the big old heave-ho, you know?
Easy to get out.
Yeah, just like it was literally like I could fit it in a shopping bag. It was really inconsequential.
See, that's nice because you don't have a lot of cleanup. But for me, this thing happened again this year where it was like the first couple of weeks that the tree was up, it was like gorgeous and fresh and beautiful. And then it just stopped drinking water after 3 days and just turned droopy and brittle. So I'm trying to shove because the tree is too big to fit through the door naturally. And when they're fresh, that's not a problem. They just...
Oh, yeah, because they're all bound and all of that.
But when you're trying to get it out of the house after it's dried out, it just explodes into thousands of tiny fragments.
Oh, yeah, it's like setting off a confetti bomb.
Yeah.
It really is. That's how it feels. That's my sister. So my sister hosted Christmas this year, and she has had a 9-foot tree in her apartment.
Yeah.
I won't lie. I giggled to no end thinking about them getting rid of that.
Yeah. I bought a 9-footer the first year that we were in our house because I realized I could fit that in the living room.
Yeah, and it is. I mean, there's something really wonderfully majestic about that.
I haven't bought the 9-footer since. It's the tree's gone down to 8 feet. And if there's a little space above the star in the ceiling, that's okay. You know, I've learned to live with that because it means I don't have to get up on a ladder to trim the top of the tree. And it's a little bit easier to get everything out of the house after Christmas.
Well, I will say, as I told you about, I spent Christmas Day in Connecticut with my best friend who from college who grew up there. And they had a 12-foot tree that was 6 feet wide.
Yeah.
And I asked her, I was like, how did this even happen? Like, how did this come? Oh, my mom hired someone to bring it in. You know my mom didn't put this up. But I swear to God, they're going to have that thing till summer because there's no way they're getting it out of their house.
There was one, I remember one Christmas because my dad and I ultimately got into a point where we started having a battle with each other over the Christmas trees, as we did with everything else. And this was either my senior year of high school or early when I was in college, because the tree in the living room could only be about 7 feet tall because of the low ceiling in the living room. So I went out and got a 15-footer and put it in the front hallway because we had this staircase that went up.
Oh, I can picture what you're talking about.
Two stories, yeah.
It's got like an atrium in the midst.
I had this giant tree up in the hallway. And everybody's walking around like, wow, that's some tree. Then you walk in the living room, you're like, yeah, that's kind of small. My dad was pissed. It was great. It was one of the few times that I actually got one over on the guy.
I will say that's always the best times to challenge your family members is Christmas time. Challenge, but you know what I mean. Like the best time to just kind of be like, oh, hey, I'm going to do this year.
I think on some level it makes me a bad person, but I don't know.
I don't know. I think it makes you a great person.
It's just that normal father-son rivalry that creeps up at a certain point.
Oh, yeah.
What do we got going on in this wild and wacky world of ours? Other
wild,
than snow.
Wacky stuff. Well, in local news, a floating hotel might be docking in Boston Seaport District. As part of an ongoing effort to revitalize the area, one developer has proposed bringing a cruise ship to port to become a permanent hotel on the water. Brett Johnstone of the Boston Zoxide Group has described it as a flotel, which is kind of hurts me to say that. along with a business partner, Johnstone plans to present the idea to the city as one option for the unused dock space behind the Blue Hills Bank Pavilion, formerly known as Dry Dock Number 4. For decades, it's sat vacant and in disrepair. And this year, the city made it a priority for redevelopment. And under their proposal, the cruise ship would have 300 to 500 hotel rooms sitting alongside the dock. On board, the public would find restaurants, bars, retail, and entertainment with a rooftop deck that would also include a swimming pool. They're waiting for the state to approve a master plan for the, like, master plan for the location, but they plan to find a developer and get started.
No, thank you.
No, thank you. I thought this was an important thing. This is like very.
Oh, it is, but it's that doesn't make it not a bad idea.
I wouldn't say that. I normally try to speak to things that don't have to do with our hospitality industry in Boston when I do the local news. But I thought this was an important one because it raises a lot of questions in terms of traffic, in terms of...
Well, here's my question. You're going to have a 500-room hotel floating in the Seaport District.
Yeah.
Okay.
Which is already flooded, if you'll pardon the pun, but it's already flooded with so much foot and car traffic.
Let me ask two practical questions. Number one, how are you going to get people to the hotel? And number two, how are you going to get people away from the hotel? And don't tell me the bus. Because people who are coming to Boston to stay in a floating hotel are not riding the MBTA to get to the hotel. And if you're going to clog that section of the city with shuttle buses running back and forth between South Station.
Or theoretically with a bunch of Ubers.
Yeah. No, thank you. There's already too much congestion and chaos down there.
And I was going to say, that part of the city is already, it's like, why are you inviting a new way to create traffic?
Yeah.
Like it.
You built two-lane infrastructure down there. And now you're trying to have thousands and thousands and thousands of people in that section of the city. And it doesn't work.
And it's already so, honestly, like, and this is from somebody who... I travel the city a lot. I go to Laugh Boston, which is right on Summer Street. I get lost and confused in that area.
Oh, yeah.
Even though I've been there a million times.
Yeah.
It's very, like you said, the infrastructure is absurd. And thinking about that paired with a 500-room hotel on the water, which means people are going to be just driving up and down everywhere trying to figure out how to get to it.
Yeah. Is there going to be parking under the hotel? No, there isn't.
No, there isn't because it's a boat.
Yeah. And by the way, that rooftop pool, boy, that's going to be a blast in the wintertime, isn't it?
That's the part that I really didn't understand. I read a couple stories about it just to try to get my bearings on it properly. And like, what can you use that 4 months out of the year?
I think it turns to rooftop skating every November.
I was going to say, are you going to make it be a skating rink from, I don't know, November to March?
Yeah. Let's just say a big no to the flotel.
Speaking of a big no, in national news, Donald Trump said today that it, quote, seems unlikely that he'll have to meet with special counsel Robert Mueller about the investigation into allegations that Trump's campaign colluded with Russia during the 2016 election, repeatedly insisting that there was, quote, no collusion. He said, quote, when they have no collusion, it seems unlikely that you'd even have an interview. As far as any potential interview, Trump left things vague, saying, certainly we'll see what happens, while suggesting it might not be necessary. He said, quote, there is collusion. This is my favorite part. There is collusion, but it's really with the Democrats and the Russians. The witch hunt continues, end quote. The president's comments today were a departure from his previously expressed willingness to meet with the special counsel. In June 2017, Trump said he was 100% willing to testify under oath about his conversations with former FBI Director James Comey. The circumstances around Trump's unexpected firing of Comey are among the topics being focused on by the team, who could be looking into whether or not Trump obstructed justice in his firing of Comey.
No, he did not. And
I don't think he did either. That's, and you know, I'm the last person to come and come to the defense of Trump.
Yeah.
But
here's the thing. The lawyers have got a hold of him now, and any lawyer faced with this situation does not want their client to talk to the special prosecutor.
Of course.
You don't want that interview to happen under any circumstances. You are going to move heaven and earth to prevent it from happening, because one of the things that can go wrong if you go in and sit down is the special prosecutor is not going to sit there and keep the questions limited to the topic at hand. Suddenly, it becomes, oh, by the way, were you involved in a real estate deal with this guy 30 years ago? And then Donald Trump says, I don't recall. And suddenly there's an investigation over there. So that's why you don't want your guy sitting down. It's not because they're trying to hide anything, even though some people will paint it that way.
Well, and that's, well, and I, where I think this is a failure in terms of people trying to say, trying to imply that he's hiding something by not wanting to be involved, is that it's going to be discredited. Like, he may very well be trying to hide something, but that isn't the reason he doesn't want to testify.
Right.
And because everyone's going to, it's going to discredit the fact that he might be trying to hide something by saying that he isn't testifying because he wants to hide something.
Yeah, they're trying to get this down to written answers, and believe me, that's not going to happen. There's no way that any prosecutor is going to let that fly. But Mueller is going to have to put forward some measure of evidence in order to compel a judge to subpoena the president of the United States to sit down and talk with a special prosecutor.
Yeah, absolutely.
So there's a little tactical element here as well. Plus, you know, look, if you're Trump's lawyer, I understand this guy's taken probably dozens of depositions in cases over the years. Donald Trump sues a lot of people. And when you're suing a lot of people, you're given a lot of depositions. He's no stranger to the process. He knows how it works. He knows how that game is played. I don't think he's ever tangled with somebody on Mueller's level. But if you're Donald Trump's lawyers, first of all, you've got that regular lawyer thing where you just don't want your client to say anything to anybody under any circumstances, so they don't want him talking to him. But then you add Donald Trump on top of that. And what bee is going to be in Donald Trump's bonnet on that particular day? Robert Mueller says something that rubs the president the wrong way, and suddenly he's off on a tangent, and now we have five new investigations opening.
And that's, I feel that that's a kind of one of the most ironic things about this, is the fact that I feel, and I know I'm not alone in terms of most Americans, I forget all the time that Donald Trump is the president.
Yeah.
Like, and I'm not saying that like I'm dumb and forget that he's the president. I mean, in terms of, he's been for years, since I was born, he's been a fixture in the public eye. And when things like this come up, it is, I think, even for a lawyer that's trying to catch him for something, it kind of falls by the wayside that, oh, right, he's the president of the United States.
You can't sit there and say, oh, it's that guy again anymore.
Exactly. Like, you just sit there and think, like, oh, it's Donald Trump.
Yeah.
It's that guy in the giant golden building in New York.
Yeah.
Like, you forget that this is the president of, this is the leader of the free world.
Yes. Yes.
As ridiculous and cartoonish as that statement is, Donald Trump is the president of the United States.
The president we deserve, yeah. One might say. America being what it is in 2018.
Fair point.
In world news, the Pyeongchang Olympics should be a nuclear-free zone now that North Korea and South Korea have reached an agreement to let athletes from the People's Democratic Republic of Korea attend the Winter Games. After the first formal meeting between North Korea and South Korea in 2 years, North Korea announced it will send two figure skaters, a Taekwondo demonstration team, cheerleaders, journalists, and support personnel to the Olympics next month. The two Koreas also agreed to reopen a military hotline and to hold future talks aimed at reducing tensions. North Korean Chief Delegate Ri Song-kwon emphasized that the North holds no hostility toward South Korea, saying that all of their, quote, atomic bombs, hydrogen bombs, and intercontinental ballistic rockets are completely targeting the United States. They are not targeting our compatriots, end quote. So,
well, isn't that sweet?
There's some good news in there, kids. All of North Korea's weapons are targeting the United States and not the South, so we can all feel good about this.
Living in one of the more liberal metropolises of the United States, that's really a comforting sentiment.
Yeah. I still don't think they could actually get those weapons up here into New England. So we're good. The rest of the country, yeah, maybe not. We'll get the fallout is the problem.
Yeah, I have two siblings and two nieces that live in New York City, so you can understand how I'm not really going to like sleep well at night as a result of this revelation. Yeah.
But at the very least, everybody who was freaked out about, oh, I don't know if I can go to the Olympics because there might be nuclear war. No, there's not going to be nuclear war.
No, if you're just going to do moguls, we're totally cool with you, even though you're American. That's basically what this statement is saying.
And you know, this is a good look for the Olympics, because basically this is North Korea and South Korea saying the Winter Games aren't just for annexing other countries anymore, which is what Putin did the last time around. So
that is true.
But it does speak to sort of the unifying power of the Olympics, and as much as we rail against the corruption and the cost of the Olympics on this show, and have for several years.
Yes.
The fact that you can get every country of the world, not always, but more often than not, to set aside whatever political differences they have and go try and prove their superiority over each other through sport is a good thing. And I think on some level, North Korea is sitting there and it's like, hey, there's a big party 100 miles from your border, and the whole world is invited, but you're going to sit there.
Like, why can't you just hang?
You're going to sit there in the dark and be like, no, we're not going. I think some of that pressure comes down, and it's moments like this when Kim Jong-un is sitting around and he's going like, you know, for everything I get out of having all these weapons and being, you know, crazy North Korea leader guy, I want to go party with the world.
I hope that's what he thinks of himself as.
Yeah.
Crazy North Korean leader guy.
I want to go party with the world. And you better believe every delegate that they send is going to be thoroughly indoctrinated in the evil corruption that will surround them as soon as they leave the protective fold of North Korea.
Well, and theoretically, I mean, that is what's beautiful about this is that, originally the Olympics were conceived as a way to just broadcast athletic achievements, it has kind of spiraled into just a way to bring the world together. And in that sense, this is kind of poetic and adorable.
It's nice. and it's, you know, if this guy's North Korea and South Korea talking again, South Korea, by the way, praised the United States today and the Trump administration and said they were the reason that we were even talking to North Korea about any of this. So there's some kind of back channel stuff going on, which we know has been going on. If this is what gets those two countries talking and gets things to calm down over there, great.
So be it. Yeah.
All right, on board.
Absolutely.
Give me more Olympics in sports news. With a thrilling overtime win on Monday night, the Crimson Tide of Alabama took home the National College Football Championship and put head coach Nick Saban in the record books. Saban's win tied him for the most national championships won by a single coach in the bowl era with Alabama coaching legend Bear Bryant, with each coach holding six titles. Saban's road to six was shorter, taking just 14 years, compared with 19 years for Bryant. Saban will likely get a chance to hold the record for most college championships won in 2019 when Alabama makes its inevitable return trip to the college championship game. Roll Tide.
We'll get it.
Here's the bar trivia that you need to know about this, okay? Because there are two bar trivia questions that everybody is going to ask as a result of this happening. There's three, actually. Which coaches hold the record for the most national championships? Nick Saban and Bear Bryant. Which coach was the fastest to win the most national college championships? That's Nick Saban. This is going to be the tricky one. This is the one that will throw everybody off. Which coach won the most national championships with Alabama? And the answer is Bear Bryant, because Nick Saban won a couple of those championships with a different school. keep those in mind because you're going to be hearing those questions. Like all the trivia guys are sitting around like, hey, I got to write things about this.
I'm still reeling just about the state of Alabama doing something right.
The Crimson Tide is not to be argued with. That Crimson Tide is one heck of a team, and they've been in the championship game three of the last four years.
Oh no, and I'm not questioning that. I was just, you know, being a Yankee jerk.
Yeah, but it's sort of like, you know, you sit there at the start of the college football season, you say, I wonder who's going to make the playoffs this year, and you pencil in Alabama, and you're like,
of course.
What will the other three teams be?
We have 50 states in the union. I think about all of them at one point or another. The number one time that I think about Alabama is college football.
Yeah.
That is, if Alabama creeps into my brain and it's not about racism, I'm thinking about football.
Yeah. That's pretty much what they got. If you're Alabama, here's what you got. You got Selma and you got the Crimson Tide.
Yeah, the Crimson Tide.
That's
yeah.
it. And you know what? That's better than a lot of states. That's more than Mississippi can say.
Yeah, I was going to say, Mississippi ain't got nothing on Alabama. And it taught me how to pronounce the word room properly. So, you know, there's that.
Roll Tide.
In entertainment news, what started as a lighthearted interview between Stephen Colbert and James Franco turned serious on CBS's The Late Show last night as the actor denied accusations of misconduct that surfaced this week on social media. After Franco appeared Sunday night at the Golden Globe Awards, where he won Best Actor in a Comedy for his role in The Disaster Artist, actress Ally Sheedy posted a series of tweets saying, James Franco just won. Please never, ever ask me why I left the film/TV business. And it should be noted that in 2014, Franco directed Sheedy in an off-Broadway play. She also tweeted, why is this man hosting? Why is James Franco allowed in? Why is a man hosting? Why is James Franco allowed in? Said too much. Night, love you. She deleted the tweets, but the screenshots made rounds online, of course. And later that night, another actress sent a tweet that accused Franco of sexual misconduct. And then yet another actress did the same thing. And when Franco addressed it last night, he said that everything circulating about him was, quote, completely not accurate.
I'm more interested to hear what Ally Sheedy has to say, because one of the women that's accusing him is basically like, you paid me $100 a day to get naked in a movie and objectified me while you were doing that. And it's like,
Remember a few weeks ago when you told me the full nudity you had me do in two of your movies for $100 a day wasn't exploitative because I signed a contract to do it?
Yeah.
Which, I'm a woman in the entertainment industry. She signed a contract to do it.
Yeah.
I don't...
Yeah.
That's, as I've said before on this show and in general, in no way defending any sort of sexual misconduct. But that being said... You signed a contract to do it. And there are lots of women coming out of the woodwork just being like, this will be my 5 minutes that I really need to capitalize and to project it or to catapult it into being 15. It's both of the women who came out after Ally Sheedy, which Ally Sheedy is wonderful and amazing.
Yeah.
And I agree that I would absolutely like to hear what her side of the story is.
Also, I tried to get an interview with Ally Sheedy many years ago when she was in a locally produced film and couldn't get near her. You know, Ally Sheedy is ridiculously private.
I would say she's very private. Much, that's why I think she was so good in The Breakfast Club, is that her character in The Breakfast Club was definitely so much her. Like, so just like, stay out of my business. I am weird and eccentric, and I don't want to explain it to you. Leave me alone.
Yeah.
And I feel that that's probably what she's like in real life. But that's the thing, is that like the other two actresses that came out afterwards are, I'm sorry, two random women, but you're nobodies.
Yeah.
And you were just trying to capitalize on a little heat surrounding James Franco.
And he tried to get a 17-year-old girl to come up to his hotel room when he was on Broadway in his 20s.
Yeah.
Which
he defended by saying, and again, I mean, it's kind of yucky for a 20-something to be hitting on a teenager. But at the same time,
It's legal.
It's legal. Yeah, exactly. And it's not even that yucky. Like, I mean, I know a person in their 30s who is dating someone in their early 20s, and they're extremely happy. It's a weird time to quote R. Kelly, but age ain't nothing but a number.
Yeah, let's not quote R. Kelly on this, because R. Kelly has a different standard of what's acceptable than
that's
the rest
true,
of us.
That's true, but it is, that being said, it is, I mean, if it's legal, you know, the heart wants what it wants.
Yeah. And I'm sorry, if you find it creepy or you don't like it, look, you're entitled to that opinion, but you can't drag the guy for it.
Oh, yeah.
If he's doing something that's legal, if you signed a contract, you don't turn around and be like, oh, no, he's a creep. He made me sign a contract and appear naked in his movie. I don't think anybody made you sign that contract.
Was somebody holding a gun to your head while you had the pen in your hand?
I am increasingly coming around to Dave Chappelle and what Dave Chappelle had to say in his second Netflix special, which he opens up talking about the whole Me Too thing and basically says, Do none of you women have any control over yourselves? Like, if a guy is on the phone masturbating, hang up. It's like, yeah.
There is, I will say, in terms of that, I had a discussion with my cousin recently about this, where it was just after the Louis C.K. thing broke. And she said to me, she's like, I don't mean to be disrespectful, but couldn't they have just left the room?
Yeah.
Couldn't they have just said no? And I told her, I said, there are two, I see where you're coming from, but there are two very distinctive differences between the way you view the world and what it's like to be a female comedian. Number one, this is not the same as if a partner in a law firm you were working for called you into his office and started jerking off in front of you. Because you could contact your HR rep, you could contact a union, you could get another lawyer, sue him for sexual harassment. Those sorts of things do not exist in stand-up comedy. We have no union, we have no rules, we don't even have a pay scale that we have to, that bookers have to abide by. Like, I've literally stood in front of a booker's car and told them they're not leaving until they pay me.
Yeah.
I've done that before.
I think I know the bookers you're talking about. I seem to recall working with them myself in the past.
Yeah, Annette, how you doing? How's that shoplifting charge? Yeah. Anyways, and then the second thing is that we're talking about basically the man who controls comedy. Like, if you say no to him, and I'm not saying that anyone should feel,
but here's the thing,
that's part of the issue that we have all over the place, which is that you shouldn't have to feel like you have to let someone do something to you or in front of you in order to feel successful. But there's something to be said about the fact that this is a male-dominated industry.
Correct.
And this is one of the most powerful, I think we all sometimes at one point in the day or week or month have that picture of him with four Emmys at his feet playing on his cell phone burned into our brain. At some point that comes up.
But here's the thing. And I said when the Louis C.K. news broke, as you will recall, that he will probably survive this. And I still think he's going to survive this.
He absolutely will.
Because the difference with Louis C.K. and everybody else is that Louis C.K. asked first. And I don't know if women thought that he was joking when he asked, or if women thought, I have to say yes to this, or he's going to ruin my career.
But it's a little bit of both.
But there is not a single shred of evidence anywhere in Louis' case that he ever blackballed or did anything against a woman that said no to him. And you have to imagine that there were other women that said no to him. And by the way,
you're only hearing about the woman who said okay.
By the way,
that's the point.
I know one of the women that said okay. And I'm not going to go into details on this, but this wasn't anything that started when Louis became famous.
Oh, no. He's been doing this for like over a decade.
This has been going on for a long time.
Yeah.
This goes all the way back to his origins here in the Bay State. And it's one of the points that I made when the Louis story broke was, I look at what Louis did, and I sincerely believe that in Louis's mind, what he was doing was not any kind of sexual assault. I'm asking for consent. I'm not touching anybody. All I'm asking is for you to watch while I do. And it's weird, and it's goofy, but it doesn't rise to the same level of sexual assault as even Al Franken, who's out sticking his tongue in women's mouths and grabbing their butts.
Well, and even, to be honest with you, I get accused a lot of being anti-feminist. I mostly just...
Becky with the good hair.
I mostly just don't have a stick far enough up a certain place. But even if you read Sarah Silverman's biography, Lucy Kay is one of her best friends, and she has come out against him being like, dude, this isn't cool. But if you read her biography called something about wetting the bed, Confessions of a Bedwetter, she talks about her and Lucy Kay being friends, and they take off all their clothes and throw them over a balcony and then giggle and run downstairs and get their clothes and put them back on and do the same thing. And it was just this weird thing that they did. And it is, I'm in no way defending him, and I obviously feel for anyone who feels they've been violated by him.
Sure.
But it's also so much is so subjective. So much is when the whole story broke, we spoke on the show about that when I first started doing comedy, there was a boy I liked and I kissed him goodnight when he was like half asleep. And the next day he said that I make out raped him. And it was totally innocent. Like, it was no big deal.
Is that a thing? Make out rape?
Evidently.
Wow, I didn't know that.
I think
that.
He made it up.
He's a millennial, isn't he?
He's, I don't know. He was born like a couple months before me.
Sounds millennial.
You know him. It doesn't matter. But it is so much of it. Like, I definitely, if you feel violated, you feel violated.
Sure.
It's fine. But so much of it comes from an innocent place. It comes from a place that... that someone in no way wanted to violate you.
Right.
You just think it's okay. And then it is okay until it's not, like what we're experiencing right now.
And I think that's an important distinction that we need to draw as we dig into all of these things. And, you know, look, Harvey Weinstein, that's pretty strong sauce right there.
Oh, yeah.
Okay? That guy is a monster.
Yeah, and he's a butt face. Absolutely.
He needs to go away. Kevin Spacey... That guy is a monster. He needs to go away. Now we're getting down to, well, you know, James Franco did this and James Franco did that.
It's like...
You got to give me more here.
That's what I'm saying, is that it's like, it's we're getting to a point where every little, tiny little thing is being dissected and scrutinized. And so often it's just some stupid thing that someone did in a moment. And it's really... innocuous.
Let's save our venom for the real rapists.
Yeah.
What I'm saying. This is me, isn't it? In technology news.
Yes.
Security patches are rolling out for the recently disclosed Meltdown and Spectre vulnerabilities, which could allow hackers to steal personal information by reading instructions executed directly in the kernel of processors powering nearly every computing device on the planet. Patches have proven problematic for Microsoft, which stopped sending updates to PCs with AMD processors after they became stuck in an endless loop, rendering them inoperable. Owners of older Intel-powered machines have reported significant declines in the speed of their machines, though Microsoft claims most people won't notice the slowdown for tasks like reading email and watching online video. That is...
So you're saying a bunch of nerds are mad.
I'm saying... There has been nonstop hysteria about the Spectre and the Meltdown viruses. They're not viruses. They're vulnerabilities for the past week. And so much misinformation flying around that it drives me nuts. I've been sitting on it and waiting for a right moment to sort of explain to people what's going on here. Okay? Every processor that's been made in the last 20 years... Whether it's in your cell phone, whether it's in your computer, whether it's in your DVD player, whether it's in your garage door opener, all have this same vulnerability. And the vulnerability exists because of the way these processors are designed to work. So what they do is they set aside a little bit of memory and they try and anticipate what instructions they're going to have to run. And by doing that, they're able to handle things faster. It's a way to make processors move more quickly. The problem is that little bit of memory sitting off to the side, which shouldn't be accessible to anybody, actually is. Somebody figured out a way to do it. Some guy sitting in a lab with infinite time and infinite creativity.
I reiterate, bunch of nerds.
Was able to figure out, hey, there's a vulnerability here. Everybody freaks out. Because now it's, oh my God, they're going to steal my information. There is not a single known attack involving this exploit. And it is unknown in the general public. I know it's known in the security world, but it's not known in the general public or among the press that is covering this story, how simple it would be to carry out this kind of an attack. There have been rumors that, oh, an infected website could do this. Well, I don't know if I trust that or I don't trust that. The reality is these patches exist for a problem that doesn't exist. They are a protective measure that we need to take. And you should upload these patches when they become available for the measure of protection that they provide, understanding full well that a determined hacker is going to find a way to get around that patch and steal that information anyway. Really, what should happen is all of that processor architecture should be thrown out and replaced, and companies like Intel and AMD should be telling us where we can go and get our new central processors. That, of course, is not going to happen because that would cost them billions of dollars and put them out of business.
Why would they want to pay for something that they're somewhat responsible for?
Now, part of the reason that you get all the misinformation about this is because you have companies like Microsoft that come out and say, oh, yeah, this will slow down your computer. Because it's slowing the computer down because it's disabling that function that allows the processor to anticipate instructions. And for some recent machines, it's not a big deal because you got so much processing power in there to begin with that it doesn't matter as much. But on older machines, it can be a big deal. For them to sit around and say, well, you won't notice it when you're reading email. You wouldn't notice anything when you're reading email. Reading email is the least intensive thing you can do with the computer. Okay? It's like opening up the text editor and typing words into it. Your computer is not breaking a sweat to do that. Online video, unless you're running it full screen and at a high resolution, if you're even capable of doing that, you probably have a graphics card that's doing most of the work. You're just pulling some data down from the internet. You won't notice it when you're writing documents. No, you won't, because that's not what a processor is designed to do. The people who are going to notice this and the people who get boned by this thing are gamers. They're the largest group out there because they throw a fortune at computers to try and get good speed and good graphics. I'm one of those people. I've got something new. I haven't noticed anything yet. Architects, graphic designers, film editors, photographers, anybody who is doing something processor intensive on their computer may discover in a couple of days that their computer just doesn't work anymore. Or doesn't work fast enough to be practical anymore. So now you got to go out and buy something new. Only problem is you can't go out and buy something new because any new computer that you buy has the same vulnerability and needs the same freaking patch. Yeah. This is a massive, massive disaster. And no one is being held accountable for it.
Well, and what's the, you know this better than me. What would the solution be?
The solution is Intel and AMD go out and give everybody new processors.
Which they're not going to do.
Don't have this vulnerability, which they're not going to do, because it would cost them billions of dollars and put them out of business. Theoretically, moving forward, new processors won't have this problem. But the fact that this problem has existed for 20 years tells you that it is endemic to the architecture of processor chips. This is something standard that's always been there that somebody finally looked at and said, wait a minute, there's a way for me to steal somebody's information using this. I don't know.
Why don't I do it?
I don't know how I'd do it. I don't know what the delivery mechanism for stealing that information and then getting it back to me would be. but I know it's theoretically possible, and the whole world needs to freak out now. That's what's happened here. So, believe me, you are far more likely to have your information stolen because of the Equifax breach last year or the Target breach a couple of years ago than you are from whatever vulnerability may exist in your processor.
Well, we can all sleep better tonight.
Yeah. Yeah. But the thing that drives me nuts about this is that this is a colossal screw up all the way around.
Oh, absolutely. And I love that it's by people who theoretically were supposed to be able to not even look to, but to kind of have by the wayside of they're going to do their job right. I don't have to worry about this in my day-to-day life.
Yeah. And one of the worst aspects of it is, you know, you have a company that knows better because Microsoft actually understands what's going on with this. Coming out and saying, well, yeah, you know, for email and watching video online, you're not going to notice a difference. Of course you're not. I can
because
read...
Because all of that stuff is foolish and stupid.
I can read email and watch video with
Sorry,
a 20-year-old...
Sorry, that doesn't mean
the same thing. 386 processor. It's the stuff that I bought my fancy computer for. Graphics editing and gaming and things like that I'm going to notice. And that's where Microsoft needs to come out and be like... Oh, yeah.
Whoopsie-doo.
If you actually use your computer, yeah, you're boned. Sorry. We'll do better next time.
There's no sun up in the sky. Stormy weather.
It's pipe bursting weather.
That's oh, fun.
That's what we got, folks. If you thought the pipe bursts in the last couple of days were fun, oh, boy. Nothing like a deep freeze and then temperatures rocketing back up to spring-like levels to make those old pipes give way. So it should be an interesting few days here around the Commonwealth. Temperatures are going to drop below freezing tonight, so any melting that took place today will refreeze and create that lovely black ice out on the roads.
Yay!
Just be safe if you're out there driving around. Tomorrow, spring-like, mostly cloudy skies, high around 50 degrees, lows in the mid-40s tomorrow night. Friday, more of the same, highs approaching 60.
60?
Yeah.
Highs did Mother Nature forget that it's January?
Highs approaching 60 on Friday. We will be in the upper 50s. Lows...
No, but you know what? That doesn't matter because global warming doesn't exist, according to our president.
Lows around 50 degrees Friday night, and there is going to be rain, and there is going to be heavy rain on Friday. So, take advantage of tomorrow's warmth if you are a homeowner and if you live in a flood-prone area to try and clear out the snow around the storm drains near you. You'll be glad you did that on Friday. Saturday, we start out warm once again. Rain will end early in the day. Highs in the low 50s. And then the temperature will fall throughout the day and into the night, landing down in the 20s late on Saturday. So if you're going out to the Patriots game, do not be fooled by the early warmth. Bundle up. And when you're out driving around on Saturday night, be particularly careful and keep an eye out for ice. Sunday, we get back into that winter pattern. Highs in the mid-20s, lows in the upper teens Sunday. Slight chance that we might see some snow flurries around. And then on Monday, same story. Highs in the mid-20s, lows around 20 degrees, maybe a flurry somewhere. So we get a couple of days of spring. We get a lot of rain that will make everything messy again. And then it's back into the cold.
Such is New England living.
If your global warming exists, Shay, it's only for 2 days. So, there you go.
Shut up.
That's what it is. Global warming, 2 days scheduled for early January. Throw out your tree week. Is also Global Warming Week. It is WMFO Medford. I'm Derek Gary. She's Shay Spillane. On the Town with Mikey D. is what happens at 9 o'clock tonight. Everything you need to know about the Boston music scene. When we come back, did you hear all the other stories that caught our attention this week?
This is Sarah Beck, consumer meat specialist for the U.S. Department of Agriculture, with a few suggestions on handling frozen meat. If you buy meat that is already frozen, be sure to place it in your freezer as soon as you get home. If you can't go directly home with your purchase, the packages can be wrapped in newspaper, for example, to prevent thawing. While freezer storage is a convenient way to keep meat, be sure you check the recommended storage time for each type of meat. and date the packages so you'll know which to use first. If stored too long, meat will begin to lose its flavor, but it will still be wholesome. It's best to thaw meat in the refrigerator. If you don't use the meat once it's thawed, you can safely refreeze it as long as it remains in good condition. For more free information, write How to Buy Meat, Agriculture Radio, Washington, D.C., 20250.
For the American Academy of Orthopedic Surgeons, I'm Dr. Tom Shives. People who enjoy winter sports can't wait for the first snowfall. But winter sports can also mean broken bones and other injuries. For instance, every year, skiing causes tens of thousands of injuries and about 30 deaths in the U.S. A lot of those are from head injuries, so skiers of all ages should wear helmets. Head injuries tend to occur late in the day when skiers may be tired, so watch out for fatigue. Using a helmet is also a great idea for children who go ice skating or sledding. Other sledding safety tips. Only go sledding in designated areas that are free of trees, posts, and fences. Adults should supervise children, and all sledders should sit facing forward, but never head first. Use a sled with runners and a steering mechanism, which is safer than toboggans or snow discs. Prevent winter sports injuries so you can focus on the fun. For more information, visit the American Academy of Orthopedic Surgeons online at aaos.org.
WMFO Medford 91.5 FM. You are listening to The Big Picture. I am Chase Pillane. With me, as always, my wonderful co-host, Mr. Derek Gary. We're going to be here with you till 9 o'clock. If you want to give us a call, we always love to hear from our listeners. Please do at 855-915-WMFO. And now one of our favorite segments of the show is Did You Hear?, where we quiz each other on the various things that have happened in the last week. And Derek, I'm going to start you off with 7-Eleven.
7-Eleven, there are a couple, actually. Is this the state-specific one or the national one?
National one.
The national one is that 7-Eleven's coast-to-coast got a visit from Immigration and Customs Enforcement.
Dun, dun, dun.
This morning, nationwide raids designed to find illegal aliens working at 7-Eleven under the table, with fake IDs, not paying their taxes, being underpaid. This was the result of a four-year investigation into the behavior of a New York franchisee.
Mm-hmm.
So that's...
21 people have been arrested in the biggest crackdown that the company's ever seen, actually.
And one of the things that the immigration folks were careful to point out here is they are not rounding up the employees. They're going after the business owners.
Oh, yes.
And this is part of a new strategy by the Trump administration. Under Obama, basically, immigration would just audit you, which means someone would call up and say, I'd like to see your records. They're not doing that. Well, they're going back into the pre-dawn raid mode that characterized the Bush administration.
Well, yeah, it's according to the latest information, ICE hit stores in 17 states and Washington, D.C., and gave managers and franchise owners 3 days to provide the agency with the immigration status of their workers or face prosecution. And this is, as Derek said, a Trump-started initiative. And under him, ICE has reportedly made nearly 40% more arrests.
Yeah.
Yowza.
Yeah. So probably, Now, the local story was that anybody who bought hot food at a 7-Eleven in Utah has been asked, I forget the exact town that it was in, but they've been asked to go see their doctor and get a hepatitis shot. because apparently the taquitos were handled by somebody with hepatitis.
I mean, that's what you get for ordering taquitos from 7-Eleven.
Taquitos have their place. They're very nice.
Yeah, but get them from Taco Bell.
No.
Have some self-respect.
7-Eleven invented the taquito.
taquito is not even an actual Spanish word.
Yes, it is.
Something that was invented by Americans.
Means little round taco.
Well, now it does.
Consumer Electronics Show.
Consumer Electronics Show. No, I don't know.
This was a Today one. Lost power for over 2 hours on the floor down in Las Vegas today. You know what's really going to wreck your fancy technology show? No electricity.
Yeah, that'll put a dent in things.
They still, and this is the first time in the history of the show that this, like, demonstrations have failed all the time. You know, like, I think it was LG was trying to demonstrate a personal assistant the other day, and it was basically ignoring everything that the demonstrator said. Like, those things happen at CES all the time, and they're hilarious. The power completely going out in the convention hall, that's a new one. And something tells me maybe the Las Vegas power grid can't handle all them smart devices. We'll find out. They haven't given a reason. They haven't given a reason for this yet, but apparently there was water leaking through the roof of the convention center a couple days ago. So maybe there's your cause.
Jason Wood. This is something you should know because it's a subject I don't even care about mostly.
Jason Wood. Athlete?
Close.
Not an athlete.
But you're in the right arena.
Jason Wood, sports reporter.
Agent.
No idea.
It has been reported that baseball agent Jason Wood of CSE Talent Agency has been fired after it was discovered that he was filming players he represents while they took showers in his home.
You know, I saw that headline, but I didn't actually read the story. I was like, oh God, what is this?
How did you not read the story? It's hilarious.
It showed up late this afternoon, and I was in the middle of something, and I was like, wait, no, I don't have time.
Well, the scheme was discovered when a player who chose to remain anonymous found a camera while using the shower at Woods' home. The player fired Wood, and then, you know, it filtered up from there. It's said that multiple clients of Woods were filmed this way, and Wood had represented Andrew Benintendi of the Red Sox and a lot of other mostly younger than him players. He's now representing no one and will be facing charges.
Are these videos going to be posted online so the rest of us can enjoy them?
God, I hope so. I mean, you know, I don't care that much about sports beyond the Red Sox and Rob Gronkowski specifically.
But baseball players in the shower, Shay is showing up for that.
Oh, yeah. Baseball players in the shower, like, I will gladly, if screensavers were a thing that